Hello, and welcome to Cruising Through History with Scott Cruz. My name is Xander. Of course, I'm sitting here with Scott. Scott, what are we talking about today?
Well, Xander, today we're going to talk about the use of submarines during the American Revolution. Now, I say submarines, and I don't really mean submarines.
I was about to say, submarine seems like we're talking World War I, not American Revolution.
Yeah, this is more of a what was called a submersible, which is sort of an early forerunner of a submarine. And it was used, it was attempted to be used against a British ship in 1776. Mm-hmm. And it failed, but we can get into that story a little bit later.
Yeah, So what's the difference between a submersible and a submarine? Because that seems like pretty important to know.
Well, the submersible is basically just a one-person ship.
Okay.
They called it a ship then. It really wasn't. The Turtle itself, it was called the Turtle. Mm-hmm. And it was invented by a guy named David Bushnell. And the ship itself, it looked more like a barrel. You know, it was like a one-person thing. It had a propeller screw that would, if you hand-cranked it, it would go through the water.
So it was completely mechanical. Like, it didn't electrically try to do something.
No electricity, and that always, I find that very amazing that one person could get in it, and you'd have to pump the screw propeller or turn it and to get out to your destination. And where this happened was in New York Harbor. So this wasn't in open water or deep water or anything.
Yeah.
It was in New York Harbor, which is off the southern tip of Manhattan Island, where the East River and the Hudson River kind of meet.
Okay.
And so, and for our listeners, I'm using hand motions, which you can't see, so that's probably not really good.
So like two rivers meet, they're kind of close to each other, they meet and then go out into the harbor. So it's
yes,
kind of like
and
that.
So the British had sent a huge flotilla to New York. Mm-hmm. And to put this in the context of what was going on at the time, the Americans had just gotten run over in the Battle of Long Island, which happened in August. And they were really struggling. And the British had all these ships, and they were bombing Manhattan and those areas. And so they thought, they were trying, I think this is almost out of desperation, they tried this.
Yeah, because the British had like one of, if not the strongest fleet at the time. So
yeah, they did.
There wasn't really Americans sitting there, not much they could really do to just straight up fight that, right?
Right, and you know, we think of 1776, and we think of the Declaration of Independence, mm-hmm. which probably just talked about a couple of weeks ago, and because of the holiday, and we think, well, there was this Declaration of Independence, and yes, there was this war, and then it was over. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, 1776, the year itself, was a very low point for the American army. I mean, Washington was still trying to, there was like a Continental Army in its infancy, and then there was militia and all these other groups, but they were run out of Long Island, and you retreat Long Island, you crossed over to Manhattan Island, and then you know, it ends with, at the end of the year, it ends with the whole attack on Trenton, mm-hmm. which was like December 26th. That's when things started to turn around, and then into 1777. So yeah, I think this was more of a gambit. In fact, Washington had financed some of this research, some of the stuff they were doing near the end of it to get the thing going. But it's interesting when you think about it, because you wouldn't think, you know, you think of a submarine, and this wasn't a submarine, I know that, but it was really the first documented use of a submersible craft in wartime.
Mm-hmm.
So
how does that idea, like, the guy that came up with this, and what was the name again?
David Bushnell.
David Bushman. How does a guy
Bushnell.
Have this idea, Bushnell, how does a guy have this idea to be like, there's a siege by water, I wonder what we do to get around that.
David Bushnell was an interesting character. He was from Connecticut. He entered Yale College when he was 31 years old, which was kind of unheard of at the time. And that was 1771.
Is that old or young for
in that era, I think mostly you were younger when you, as of now. A lot of people go to college later.
But I mean, at the time, was that old?
Yeah, it was old. It was kind of It was kind of not the norm
okay.
for a 31-year-old to enter college then. And one thing he came up with was the first idea he had was he figured out how to explode gunpowder underwater. That's what started this.
Mm-hmm.
So he thought, I wonder if you could build some kind of contraption where you could go under a ship and you could put something under it to blow it up.
So it was like he invented something that, you know, works gunpowder underwater. And that's, that itself sounds pretty amazing.
Right.
To be the first person to figure that out. Cause I think gunpowder, when it's wet, doesn't really work
too
well.
I think you encase it in something like a bomb.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also came up with the idea of mines.
Oh, okay.
Because he thought, well, if you hit something, it's floating in the water, it will blow up. So mm-hmm. on contact.
Oh, okay.
So that was where his innovation came in.
His problem was, well, how do I get this to somebody? How do I deliver this?
But the other thing, I should have mentioned this, the other idea he came up with, there was in New Haven, where Yale College is, there was a watchmaker and kind of a guy who tinkered around with a lot of stuff. He was mostly a watchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
He was named Isaac Doolittle. And he came up, so what they did is he said, well, you know, you could put a mechanism on there where you could time it. So if you put this under a ship, you'd have enough time to leave the scene, like a time bomb.
Yeah.
So you'd have it.
Like cartoon-esque time bomb or like movie-esque time bomb.
There's a little bit of a cartoonist aspect to some of this, but mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah, so him and this Doolittle guy worked together and came up with that idea. So. So it was tried. So that was September 5th, 1776 is when they tried it.
Okay.
They recruited some. I mean, I don't know who would volunteer for something.
That sounds like, because you already talked about the propeller and you have to like spin. Like, okay, well, tell me about the like actual layout for someone to try it. How did someone get in this thing?
Well, you would go in through the top, from what I can understand. There are four replicas of it built.
Mm-hmm.
that are in various nautical museums around the world still today. There's actually a really good book called Turtle.
Just the Turtle.
David Bushnell's Revolutionary Vessel.
Okay.
And not only does it talk about the history of it, it also talks about how to rebuild it. Because unfortunately for history, the ship itself or the craft was sunk because it was being towed on a barge or something and the British attacked it. This was about a month later in October. And it was sunk and it was lost. So most of this stuff comes from these plans that Bushnell had, most of these recreations of it. So it's like a big round, looks like a barrel, if you will. So you go in through the top, and it did have, so how you would submerge is it had a tank near the bottom, so you'd flood it with water and mm-hmm. it would go down. And then you would release the water and you'd come back up.
So it's, that system is still in use in...
Using water as ballast, yes,
yeah,
correct.
And boats and submarines and submersibles, that's the same setup.
Yes. And so it's interesting that Bushnell wasn't the first one to have this idea per se. There was a Dutch inventor named Cornelius Drebbel
mm-hmm.
in the 1620s. Now, allegedly, there's not a lot of proof of this, but... He was a real person. But allegedly, he built a submersible, and he had actually rode down the Thames River in London in it,
mm-hmm.
and took King James with him. Now the story starts to get a little bit, but there is some speculation that Bushnell was familiar with some of Drebbel's work, and even going back to ancient history. I mean, there's always been the story of Alexander the Great in 332 BC being lowered into the water in something like a diving bell, so he could. When they were besieging the port of Tyre, which is on the far eastern Mediterranean coast in the Middle East, and he was lowered on chains under the water so he could observe what some of his divers were doing when they were trying to take the port. So, and Archimedes, the Eureka guy,
mm-hmm.
as I call him, you know, he came up, he had the idea of buoyancy. You know, he experimented with buoyancy, and that's one of the things. So negative buoyancy is... Now, I'm not an engineer, whoever's listening, so... So negative buoyancy, you know, it sinks you, but you got to figure out where's the equal so you stay under the water. Now, the turtle didn't go way under the water because it did have a pipe in it to expel carbon monoxide, because there was only about 30 minutes worth of oxygen in the thing. And I imagine you'd use a lot of that up just cranking the propeller to get it to where you want it to go. So
this seems, because no electricity, again, I bring that up because this seems like it's physically strenuous to use, like extremely physical task, and you only have 30 minutes.
Pretty much. And Ezra Lee, who was a sergeant in the Continental Army, he was the guy who volunteered to go in the water.
Oh, okay.
And so, and it was very choppy water that day, so I imagine just getting out to the ship. And he did it before sunrise because he didn't want to be spotted. So I imagine that must have been quite, just to get out to the ship, which would have been probably about in the middle somewhere, that must have been strenuous just to do that part. So he did, and everything worked until he tried to attach the bomb.
Okay.
That's where things went awry, because the bomb was in a hollowed out like oak barrel, little one. And you could attach it using an auger, like a screw, and you screw it into the bottom and then it would attach.
But the thing that I'm thinking, when I think of like screwing something in, I'm thinking, you know, a hand drill, you screw something in and it's stuck.
No, I believe this, the turtle had a mechanism that you would put it on top and you could.
But it's still manual.
Yes, you could screw it, but you were in the ship.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the British had started putting, they had started using iron under their ships, and that was to attach the rudder to the, let me see if I can get this. The frigate, it would hold the rudder hinge to the stern.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay. Well, they didn't. The Americans didn't know the British had started doing this.
Oh.
So here we go. Instead of trying to drill into hand crank a drill into wood, you're now trying to do it into iron.
Yep.
And it's not working.
Yep.
So that's not working. So he decided to move down farther on the ship. Well, suddenly the ship ascended. No one really knows why. It came to the surface. They don't know if the pilot had made a mistake and somehow had released some of the water, so it popped up.
And by the ship, the turtle, right? Or is it the British ship?
I'm sorry, yes. He popped up right next to the British ship, which was the HMS Eagle, I believe. And he still hadn't been spotted yet, but he thought, this isn't good. I can't submerge again. He did try to reattach the bomb, but it didn't work. And daylight was breaking. Meanwhile, some British on other ships had started seeing this strange vehicle in the water and weren't quite sure what in God's name was going on.
Right? Like, who would expect something to be there, right?
Right. And so they... So he thought the better part of valor was to get out of there. And so I imagine this chase going on because one of the British ships started to follow him. And, you know, I imagine this guy doing this screw propeller thing trying to get back to land. He did throw his bomb, but unfortunately all it did was blow up some water. It did scare off the British ship, though, because it stopped the pursuit.
So the British were dealing with this in, like, three different new technologies, this whole submersible thing. Then the bomb itself, this gunpowder exploding in water.
Right.
And it's a time bomb.
Yes, that's why I think even though he wasn't able to attach it, he still had it, so he just threw it, and then it blew up eventually. But yeah, it was really interesting because, like I said, it was sunk the month after that.
Yeah.
And Bushnell didn't really try to recreate that. He thought it was a failure, so he didn't want to recreate it. He put more of his time into mines and things of that nature. And he did, actually, Bushnell did become a member of the Continental Army And that happened in 1778, I think. Washington had come up with a corps of what he called sappers and miners, and so Bushnell became the leader of this.
Yeah. And so this sounds amazing to me, because when you mentioned the whole propeller, I'm just like, wait, was the propeller a thing before this, like the propeller that Bushnell used?
You know, I don't know, and it was interesting, because I was reading this, I kept having some of these same questions, like, mm-hmm. Well, how do you get this idea? But he never really said how he got a lot of his ideas. And I think there's some speculation that this Isaac Doolittle came up with a lot of these ideas, too.
Oh, so it's like he gets the main credit, Bushnell.
Right.
And Doolittle, the guy is, you know, the really handy guy, is like, well,
it's almost. It's funny, because when I was looking at this story, I said, you know, it's a little similar to the one where we talked about mustard gas.
Mm-hmm.
You had this Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Alexander, who would have been lost to history had it been not for certain things happening. And for well, the funny thing about Bushnell is he was actually captured by the British.
Really? Wow.
In 1779, and he was released about a year later in a prisoner exchange. But I had a feeling, had they known that he was the one who had kept trying these floating mines and what they called torpedoes in those days,
mm-hmm.
I think they wouldn't have given him up. They didn't know who he was. So,
well,
and he was at Yorktown too, so he was there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, it's interesting when you think about, you know, this whole idea. It's like, first of all, I would never have gotten into the water. I mean, it could have just went right to the bottom. I mean,
right.
But I think it was in the design too. You know, you think of diving bells now and think of that. So, mm-hmm. and things they use. I mean, it's so different now. There's technology. I mean, you think of, but and it's weird that even though that ship was sunk, that the turtle was lost. Now it could have broken up. No one really knows. No one ever found it. And I don't think Robert Ballard's going to go looking for it because it's not the Titanic or something.
Yeah. So. It's just a failed little experiment, but
pretty much.
But yeah. But there's a lot of like legacy to this one. Even though it failed, there's a lot mm-hmm. of legacy, because you mentioned you know, time bombs and
right.
first submersible to be used in war.
Right. Yeah.
And so I guess what have you seen like as a result of this whole thing happening?
Well, I think the whole sub technology. We always think it started in the Civil War with the CSS Hunley, I think it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, that one I'd heard about.
And that one sunk, too. Mm-hmm. And so, but there is a book called The Deep Dive by Ian Ballantyne, which is like the definitive history of submarine warfare. And he does touch on it. I mean, he's the one who goes, that's where I got the Archimedes story from. I never knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I knew Archimedes had all these inventions and stuff, but I didn't connect buoyancy to that, so I should have. But I don't know. There's like this leg, and then all of a sudden the CSS Hunley appears, and you know. But even after that, I mean, you don't really hear about. I think what we think of submarines, that's when you start getting it. Like the Hunley was bigger, and that was run by different locomotive power.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see World War I subs. Now we're getting into submarines, not these little ships. But you're right, it was basically a failure. In fact, the other experiments Bushnell did with mines, like he would just float them down the river, he did try that. They failed too. They ended up killing two kids, but they didn't really, all they did was alert the British that these things were in the water. So, and there's an interesting sort of postscript to Bushnell. After the war, he went to France. And in Paris, he had run across Robert Fulton, who was also working on his own. He had his own ideas of these floating mines and things like that. So, mm-hmm. And then he came back to America and died in like 1823, 24, something like that. So.
Yeah, that's just, that whole idea is that even in the propeller system that came about in the turtle is still used today. The same kind of similar systems. Mm-hmm. And things that, I mean, when we talk about submersibles, you know, I was looking some stuff up, and it was like submersibles now, a lot of the time submersibles are even attached to submarines. Like right, they're right. Or deep dive missions like you think Mariana's Trench, but they still all use the same ideas that came about right. in this failed turtle.
Right.
Like this, I imagine this turtle is flipped over the whole time, essentially. That's what it was, but the idea of having a shell.
Right. And what's funny is people said, well, it's not doesn't look like a turtle, it looks like a clam in its shape, but I think it was more of a barrel shaped, so I think that's where you get, because how Bushnell described it was that it looked like he had put two turtle shells together, and that's how the name came about, whereas people thought it looked like a clam, but I, looking at it myself, I don't really think it looks like a clam, and I don't know if it's that important.
Well, it's even like shooting barrels in the water, that's what it sounds like to me. It's like, oh, it's a barrel, right?
Yeah, right, and it's still a mystery why it ascended mm-hmm. and didn't stay under the water. It had to be some kind of pilot error, and it's funny because Ezra Lee himself, he was a sergeant in one of the units that were got beaten up pretty badly in the Battle of Long Island. So they wondered if he volunteered for this to sort of clear their honor, mm-hmm. you know, because it wasn't going well at that time, and even the later battles, and that's what you hear about. We always hear about Trenton, but we don't really hear about how Washington got out of New York. And he did several river crossings, not just the famous one, mm-hmm. into New Jersey. And he knew to keep sort of zigging and zagging to try to avoid the British. In fact, you know, his legend only grew because of certain things that happened. Like when the morning when they retreated off of Long Island, I think it was, somehow a fog had rolled in. So the British weren't even aware that they left. So when the fog lifted, they were gone. You know, like it was magic or something.
Yeah. What did Washington think about this turtle thing? Because you said he funded some of it.
He funded some of it. I think he was looking, he was always, you know, he had these other side interests. He was always very interested in like intelligence and spies and things like that. This doesn't have anything to do with that, but I think he was just seeing if it would work. And I think Bushnell had corresponded with Benjamin Franklin too, and because these were all Enlightenment people, so mm-hmm. they were always interested in you know improvements, as they would call them, or they were interested in science. They didn't call it natural science, is what they would call it, or natural philosophy, or something like that. So I think for them this is all kind of neat stuff, but of course it didn't work, and but of course it didn't. Even if it had worked. I was thinking about this morning, just speculating, and even if it had worked, I don't think it would have mattered a whole heck of a lot, because if there's 50 ships in the harbor and you blow up one, yeah, they're going to say, how did that blow up? But I don't know if it's going to, you're going to need an army of turtles to go under ships and attach things.
Can you imagine 50, like getting 50 people to go out under those things?
I could just see that. And I don't mean to laugh, but when I was thinking about him trying to get away from the British ships, you know, you just picture this guy like cranking this propeller through the water, and you know, you still get, it's not like it's a river like we think of. I mean, it's you're still getting currents and things of that nature and rough water, and which would bounce the ship too, so, or the submersible. So yeah. It this is a little different than I had kind of heard of this story, but once again, I know in the one of our previous one on mustard gas, I had talked about an author named Rick Atkinson,
okay,
who wrote a trilogy about World War II. Well, he's working on one on the American Revolution, and his first book came out 2 years ago called The British Are Coming, and it goes up to Princeton, which is early 1777, but it's really good because he talks about this in there.
Oh.
And I had kind of known about it, but again, it was something that, unlike the mustard gas things, which I never had any inkling of, I kind of knew about this, but I thought, well, this is kind of interesting because it shows you that, you know, and then maybe in some ways, Washington was desperate to break what was going on in New York, but of course it didn't happen that way. But you're right, it's interesting that this little failed experiment, it led to, and there's some gaps in, you know, going from one war to the next.
Yeah, of course.
But it's interesting.
Wow. That's awesome. And now it's just thinking that little turtle, and now we have nuclear subs. Like,
yeah.
starting small in terms of underwater warfare. But
right. And I don't know, you know, we think about non-warfare applications, and yeah, I'm sure there's it led to other things too.
Oh, yeah,
under the water and that. So, but it's like these tinkers, you know, you think about this in colonial America, there's different people like this. And they're always like watchmakers and even a clockmaker, you had to know.
Yeah.
That's very intricate work, not like we think of it in the clocks then. And so mm-hmm. I think that it, you know, there's always been sort of this, I don't want to say myth because there's some truth to it, but there's always been sort of, you know, the American ingenuity or, but of course it was American ingenuity, but also based on previous things that happened too.
Yeah.
And that's how science works. So.
And so there are, you said there were recreations of this, right?
Yes.
Where would someone see one of them?
One place I know is in Connecticut, there is a museum there. And if you actually look up the Wikipedia article on this, which, I mean, I'd rather people read the book, but even the Wikipedia has pictures of it, and so you get a better idea of the things about it. Yeah. I think there was a nautical museum in Connecticut, and the three other ones, the names escape me right now,
okay,
off the top of my head. But
someone could see
basically
what it was.
Right, and that's the nice thing about this book, really, because it does show you tons of drawings, and I think they did a recreation of it like in around the bicentennial year,
mm-hmm.
and it was in Connecticut, of course, where that's where it was invented, really.
Yeah.
So yeah, just these little things, how they lead to big things, I guess.
Yeah. One more time, what is that book again?
It's called just called Turtle, David Bushnell's Revolutionary Vessel.
Awesome, thank you, Scott. So Scott, next time. You know what we're talking about?
Yeah, I do, actually. I was driving to work one day, and I heard a commercial for a true crime podcast. And I know those are all the rage now. So I thought, oh, I can probably think of something. So I'm going to talk about the theft of the Mona Lisa in 1911 from the Louvre.
Okay.
And the repercussions that had after that.
All right. Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. I hope our listeners are looking forward to it as well.
Cool.